Good morning and happy Thanksgiving. My name is Michael McCusker. Last Thanksgiving, a majority of Americans were delirious with joy. We rejoiced that we were finally rid of Donald Trump after a four-year malignancy that seemed an eternity of bad karma. Instead, Trump has infected this past year as toxically as the plague, which, like his presumptuous evil cloud, won't go away. His snarling stench of toxic filth continues to rip out the heart of our democracy. I start today's program with No Thanks to Thanksgiving by Robert Jensen, which I have read at least once in the past. No thanks to Thanksgiving. Instead, we should atone for the genocide that was incited and condoned by the very men we idolize as our heroic founding fathers. One indication of moral progress in the United States would be the replacement of Thanksgiving Day and its self-indulgent family feasting with a National Day of Atonement accompanied by a self-reflective collective fasting. In fact, indigenous people have offered such a model. Since 1970, they have marked the fourth Thursday of November as a day of mourning in a spiritual political ceremony on Coles Hill overlooking Plymouth Rock, Massachusetts, one of the early sites of the European invasion of the Americas. Not only is the thought of such a change in this white supremacist holiday impossible to imagine, but the very mention of the idea sends most Americans into apoplectic fits, which speaks volumes about our historical hypocrisy and its relation to the contemporary politics of empire in the United States. That the world's great powers achieved greatness through criminal brutality on a grand scale is not news, of course. That those same societies are reluctant to highlight this history of barbarism also is predictable. But in the United States, this reluctance to acknowledge our original sin, the genocide of indigenous people, is of special importance today. It is now routine, even among conservative commentators, to describe the United States as an empire, so long as everyone understands we are an inherently benevolent one. Because all our history contradicts that claim, history must be twisted to serve the purpose of the powerful. Our vehicle for taming history is various patriotic holidays, with Thanksgiving at the heart of U.S. myth building. From an early age, we Americans hear a story about the hardy pilgrims whose search for freedom took them from England to Massachusetts. There, aided by the friendly Wampanoag Indians, they survived in a new and harsh environment, leading to a harvest feast in 1621, following the pilgrims' first winter. Some aspects of the conventional story are true enough. But it's also true that by 1637, Massachusetts Governor John Winthrop was proclaiming a Thanksgiving for the successful massacre of Pequot Indian men, women, and children, part of the long and bloody process of opening up additional land to the English invaders. The pattern would repeat itself across the continent until between 95% and 99% of American Indians had been exterminated, and the rest were left to assimilate into white society or die off on reservations out of view of polite society. Simply put, Thanksgiving is the day when the dominant white culture, and sadly, most of the rest of the non-white but non-indigenous population, celebrates the beginning of a genocide that was, in fact, blessed by the men we hold up as our founding fathers. The first president, George Washington, in 1783, said he preferred to buy Indians' land rather than driving them off it because it was like driving wild beasts, quote unquote, from the forest. He compared Indians to wolves, being beasts of prey, though they differ in shape, quote unquote, by George Washington. Thomas Jefferson, President number 3 and principal author of the Declaration of Independence, which refers to Indians as the merciless Indian savages, was known to romanticize Indians and their culture, but that didn't stop him in 1807 from writing to his Secretary of War that in a coming conflict with certain tribes, we shall destroy all of them, quote unquote. As the genocide was winding down in the early 20th century, Theodore Roosevelt, President number 26, defended the expansion of whites across the continent as an inevitable process, quote, due solely to the power of the mighty civilized races which have not lost the fighting instinct and which by their expansion are gradually bringing peace to the red wastes where the barbarian people of the world hold sway. Roosevelt also once said, I don't go so far to think that the only good Indians are dead Indians, but I believe 9 out of 10 are, and I shouldn't like to inquire too closely into the case of the 10th. How does a country deal with the fact that some of its most revered historical figures had certain moral values and political views virtually identical to Nazis? Here's how respectable politicians, pundits, and professors play the game. When invoking a grand and glorious aspect of our past, then history is all important. We are told how crucial it is for people to know history, and there is much hand-wringing about the younger generation's lack of knowledge about and respect for that history. But when one brings into historical discussions any facts and interpretations that contest the celebratory story and make people uncomfortable, such as the genocide of indigenous peoples as the foundational act in the creation of the United States, suddenly the value of history drops precipitously, and one is asked, why do you insist on dwelling in the past? This is the mark of a well-disciplined intellectual class, one that can extol the importance of knowing history for contemporary citizenship and, at the same time, argue that we shouldn't spend too much time thinking about history. This off-and-on engagement with history is not of mere academic interest. As the dominant imperial power of the moment, U.S. elites have a clear stake in the contemporary propaganda value of that history. Obscuring bitter truths about historical crimes helps perpetuate the fantasy of American benevolence, which makes it easier to sell contemporary imperial adventures, such as the invasion and occupation of Iraq, as another benevolent action. Any attempt to complicate this story guarantees hostility from mainstream culture. After raising the barbarism of America's much revered founding fathers in a lecture, I was once accused of trying to humble our proud nation and undermine young people's faith in our country. Yes, of course, that is exactly what I would hope to achieve. We should practice the virtue of humility and avoid the excessive pride that can, when combined with great power, lead to great abuses of power. History does matter, which is why people in power put so much energy into controlling it. The United States is hardly the only society that has created such mythology. While some historians in Great Britain continue to talk about the benefits that empire brought to India, political movements in India want to make that mythology of Hindutva into historical fact. Abuses of history go on in the former empire and the former colony. History can be one of the many ways we create and impose hierarchy, or it can be part of a process of liberation. The truth won't set us free, but the telling of truth at least opens the possibility of freedom. As Americans sit down on Thanksgiving Day to gorge themselves on the bounty of empire, many worry about the expansive effects of overeating on their waistlines. we would be better to think about the constricting effects of the day's mythology on our minds. And that was No Thanks to Thanksgiving by Robert Jensen, who is a journalism professor at the University of Texas at Austin and the author of The Heart of Whiteness, Confronting Race, Racism, and White Privilege, published by the famous City Lights Books. And now, some personal observations by myself. Today is Thanksgiving Day in the USA. There is serious doubt about what there is to be thankful about. The plague that continues to ravage through the country and most of the rest of the human inhabited world. The intensifying political schism in these increasingly disunited states that seems inevitably to be leading to the devastating chaos and fratricide of civil war. The embroiling violent hatreds that rigidifying political factionalism engenders. The spit-in-the-face terror of savage racism by white supremacist right-wing politics. The thankless horror of political and racial genocide, which most likely will be the specious result of fratricidal civil war. There probably has not been a more necessary moment since the revolution to be aware exactly of our rights and obligations as American citizens during this menacing, schizoidal period of resurgence of ultra-white nationalist neo-fascism in the USA. The revered revolutionary ancestors anticipated critical events of great tragedy, anxiety, and even internal betrayal, and they realized unscrupulous persons and factions would seize any opportunity to grasp power and rip the heart out of constitutional government, and especially the Bill of Rights. Limits on power were established precisely to curb the avaricious ambitions of many among the citizenry, to prevent them from getting their avaricious hands on constitutional rights, which have been passed on through succeeding generations for nearly 2.5 centuries. Our freedoms and liberties are, in essence, also our obligations as well, to preserve them for our descendants, as our predecessors strived, for the most part, to preserve them for us. We have the absolute right to protect and defend our rights and the rights of others who are our co-citizens, whatever their colors or creeds, and we have a fundamental responsibility to do so. We are a democracy because it is necessary. We have inherited rights and liberties sought by the mass of humanity for millennia. Yet the farther removed we are from the intense imperatives of our ancestors for freedom and equality, the greater the danger we will allow them to be wrenched away by homegrown despots who crave and conspire for absolute power. In periods when even friends and neighbors criticize dissent, it is essential to resist the false inducements for imperious totalitarian seizure of democratic governments, to question with intelligent and vigorous skepticism the claims that curbing civil liberties is necessary to the nation's survival. This is precisely the type of situation our Yankee Doodle progenitors had in mind when they set up an imperfect but amendable Constitution and its Ten Commandments of American democracy. Human rights and freedoms have not been an easy achievement, nor equal justice anything other than perpetual conflict between those who would expand rights and liberties and others who would limit or abolish them altogether. In a very real sense, the division between revolutionary patriots, an oxymoron to be sure, who believed the Bill of Rights to the Constitution was unnecessary, and a greater majority of Yankee Doodle patriots who fervently demanded they were essential, was primarily that the former was attempting to establish themselves as a leader class, and the latter refused that pompous assertion of superiority, demanding that enumeration of basic rights for all was absolutely necessary. Thomas Jefferson wrote, "Experience has shown that even under the best forms of government, those entrusted with power have, in time, perverted it to tyranny." Quote, unquote. The USA probably should, as so many suggest, refresh itself in this dark period of crises and uncertainty with a fresh infusion of original principles. But these are difficult to pin down and incredibly problematic to apply to an evolving millennial society. The endless cycle of individual rights and obligations, melding within collective necessities, is distinctly at play in this period of trauma and crises. The original framers of our democracy had, at least, the foresight to recognize that the interests and problems of succeeding generations would most certainly be different than their own. Perhaps this Thanksgiving Day, we might hearken to some advice by Walt Whitman, which he wrote as preface to the 1855 edition of his immortal book of poetry, Leaves of Grass. "This is what you should do. Love the earth and sun and the animals. Despise riches. Give alms to everyone that asks. Stand up for the stupid and crazy. Devote your income and labor to others. Hate tyrants. Argue not concerning God. Have patience and indulgence toward the people. Take off your hat to nothing, known or unknown, or to any man or number of men. Re-examine all you have been told at school or church or in any book. Dismiss what insults your own soul, and your very flesh shall be a great mole." That was by Walt Whitman. This is Michael McCusker. Dylan Hauser Schalk engineers this program. Today, November 25th, is also International Day to Eliminate Violence Against Women. The United Nations proclaimed this day in 1999 to commemorate the murders of the three Mirabel sisters, Maria, Teresa, and Minerva, in 1961 by order of the ruthless dictator of the Dominican Republic, Rafael Trujillo. Although today's commemoration is recognized worldwide, it is estimated that 1 in 4 of the world's women continue to be raped, brutalized, or murdered. The UN is calling for 16 days of activism from today through December 10th, which is the 73rd anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Remember that our Thanksgiving is the result of stealing the continents away from civilizations which we buried and whose descendants we continue to treat with benign contempt. Remember that our intrusion wiped out entire species of wildlife and continue to render others close to extinction. Remember, we made slaves of a race we have never quite freed. Racism is rampant. And wherever your parachute took you, happy Thanksgiving, D.B. Cooper. And now, a poem by Jim Dott. Evergreen. Evergreen, your trunk burns in the wood stove. Your branches hang in the wreath at the door. When others freeze and darkness rules, your life remains a fire damped down till dawn. When snows have buried shrubs and grasses, when broad leaves have shed their leaves, you still gather in the sun, ever clothed in needle leaves, ever breathing, ever making unseen magic with water, light, and air, ever rooted in soils of sand, of clay, or clamped to rock, ever straight, stiff, skyward reaching in the calm, ever bending, leaning with the wind, limbs upcurled, their needles dangling, life-giving evergreen. and that was Evergreen by Jim Dodd.